podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap, except for it isn't the Anfield Wrap. The Anfield Wrap's coming in a minute. I'm Neil Atkinson. This is John Givens. John's with me. We recorded the Anfield Wrap around Sunday lunchtime. And then obviously since then, the news has broken that Virgil van Dijk's going to need surgery and maybe out for a lengthy period that might take up the rest of the season, John. It's a massive blow. Let's just be crystal clear about that. It'd be a massive blow to any side's ambitions.
Yeah, it will be. He's our best player. I think, you know, we've got lots of them. We're very lucky. But if you look at the guys who've been at the top of the PFA awards, you know, the guys who are seen throughout the league as the leading lights, you know, he is ours. And, you know, if anyone at the top were to lose the best player for what effectively looks like a season, it'd be a huge blow to what they were trying to do. It's obviously compounded by the fact that it's probably an area of the pitch where we could least do with losing someone. You know, the midfield options, you know, are pretty strong at the moment. Even the forward guys, you know, we look to have a couple more options there. And there's others who can, you know, who could take the sort of strain, if you like. Virgil, he's our best centre half. He's our leader there. And we were already, I think, a few of us saying, oh, we might be a little bit short there. Obviously, they've been using Fabinho, you know, and now it just looks really, really tough for those guys who have issues themselves, obviously, to play all these games.
Well, that's my biggest concern, really, honestly, is the, you know, obviously Virgil van Dijk is a terrific footballer, but for me, it's an opportunity, in a sense, for Matip and Gomez to show what they're about, especially Gomez, who I think will end up slotting in to that side where normally he plays the other side and he gets targets, not least because he's not Virgil van Dijk. I think it's a massive opportunity for him. My concern is just that Matip and Gomez themselves like an injury. I'm almost more concerned about that than I am about anything else. If I felt certain that Matip and Gomez would be available for every league game between now and the end of the campaign, I'd say, all right, yep, you know, we just dust ourselves down and then it's an opportunity for those lads. My worry is what happens when one of them gets a knock.
Yeah, then suddenly it's Fabinho and who on the bench? Is it Kemetio? You know, you're looking at it's Williams did okay in those League Cup games, but it's a big jump, isn't it, from League Cup to playing Champions League, which is you know what we're starting in this week. So it is tough, you know. It almost makes you pine for Dejan Lovren, doesn't it, to sort of come back, because he won't be worried at all, Dejan. No, nope. Like, leave it to me. I'll sort this.
I'll absolutely box this off. I think, you know, for me, it's worth saying, John, this is a Liverpool side that's conceded more than two goals, I think, seven times since we've returned since lockdown. So it is important to sort of remember that it's not like things have been absolutely perfect at the back. And as I say, it's as much the idea of the attendance as it is anything else.
Yeah, it is. Look, Virgil is, you know, it's got the record, hasn't he, for Premier League games in a row, when he was just always there and he looked like Superman, didn't he, in every possible way, and you just thought, oh, nothing's good. And I sort of understand, you know, why they didn't go for the centre half in the summer, and that obviously, this will shine a light on it now, and people will, you know, say what they should have done. But I'm sure they were just going, yeah, but Virgil will just play every week. Do you know what I mean? And that's that's what he's done, you know, for Liverpool. And this is a freak injury, isn't it? It's something that you couldn't necessarily account for. And so now we are in this situation with as we've both said to you guys, who are not too sure themselves in terms of, you know, availability. But as you say, it's an opportunity for them to step up as well, in particular Gomez, in particular. You know, he should be looking at this and thinking, you know what, well, I want to grow in terms of my leadership. I want to grow in terms of what I'm offering for this team, really. And both of them have played brilliant games for Liverpool. You know, both of them are really good defenders, and both of them, you know, haven't got anything to prove in terms of it. Well, do they belong in this squad? Because we know that they do, but what they have got things to prove in terms of, you know, people are talking about a lack of leadership now. People are talking about, well, who's going to, you know, be the main guy. People talking about set pieces and stuff. It doesn't help that obviously we can see the set piece from a set piece almost straight away. And they should see that as a challenge that they want to sort of, you know, to throw out. And it could be the making of one of them. Who knows?
Indeed, time to stand up and be counted. I'm banging to that. Let's get back on board the Reds. A big game coming up against Ajax. But listen, this is prior to the Anfield Wrap. So the Anfield Wrap's going to start now. It's got Rob Gutman, it's got Ben Johnson, it's got Melissa Reddy on. It's the absolute business. Me and John just sort of adding this little bit in there. So when they do the bit where we don't know what's happening with Virgil, this is what's happening with Virgil. We've made that ground up for you. We'll see you later on.
It is the Anfield Wrap. I'm Neil Atkinson, and with me, I've got Rob Gutman, I've got Ben Johnson, I've got Mel Reddy to predominantly talk about the Merseyside derby. We will move on and have a little bit of a chat about Ajax. And Mel's tentatively put a book just in front of us, so we may have a little chat to her about that as well and how excited she is to have got it all done in time for Christmas to reflect back on Liverpool winning the title last season. We will get to the rules and referee, and we're not going to not do that bit, but we're going to put it off for a little while because I want to start off talking about the nature of the game. And I want to start off, Mel, talking about the nature of the champions, in that it was a side that had got whacked 7-2, and whilst there were three deflected goals for Villa, they deserved to get whacked on the night, and I think it was about as impressive a performance as you could have expected under those circumstances. Liverpool looked at Goodison Park like the league champions from the very outset of the game.
Yeah, it would have been hugely concerning to me if we didn't see a return to the norm, the intense, confident, problematic Liverpool, problematic for the opposition Liverpool, because the key tenet of Jurgen Klopp's spell in charge has been how the club have reacted to setbacks, something they obviously got from him. And one of the key issues in the Villa game, actually, was that Liverpool concede the early goal and then they don't react properly. There's no strong reaction. There's actually a dropping of the shoulder. And the first thing Klopp referenced in the aftermath of that was the body language. He said it's fine to, you know, concede a silly goal, but it's not fine to then not pick yourself up after it. And so the Merseyside derby, in a Liverpool sense, was huge to see how the team would deal with that. Because when you get dropped 7-2, it can have a massive psychological effect. It can make you second-guess yourself in your use of the high line or your defensive ability or your ability to pressurize the ball still. And they were, like you say, from the onset, I think about 5 minutes in, before Sadio's goal, actually, you could tell that Liverpool were Liverpool again, which was obviously crucial.
It's across the whole of the game, Ben, I'd sort of characterise it as Liverpool were dominant, but Everton were dangerous. You felt as though they were they're capable of creating chances in moments, but they weren't able. They just weren't able to live with Liverpool. I think one of the issues around the Van Dijk injury, and as I say, we'll get into the specifics of it later, one of the issues with it is it actually just does stem Liverpool's momentum a tiny little bit. But all the way through the rest of the match, whenever Liverpool went through the gears, Everton just couldn't live with them.
No, Liverpool, and rightly so. You know, Everton are a decent side. They say they're dangerous. They are dangerous. They've got some good players. But Liverpool, last season, were the best team in the country by a long way. And we've improved the starting 11. First 5-10 minutes, you're right. The tempo, the pace, the quality, the finding of space, just kept picking Salah out time and again in that little half space behind, sort of to the side of Alan, behind Gomez. Gomez was just doing shuttles, didn't know where he was. And Liverpool were fantastic. And I think the thing Mel touched on, the main point I saw from watching the first sort of 10 minutes was the aggression. Virgil, before he goes off injured, clatters two people. First minute, bang, right up, and into him, and then he's moaning at the referee, that's not a foul. Next one, bang. And I think you're right, Virgil going off did impact the game. It did sort of stem our flow, but it also impacted our aggression a little bit. And I think, you know, Virgil's that good and has been that good that he's been sort of almost coasting for the last sort of 3 months or so. Because he's been that good.
What's the count of year?
And I think someone said to him, lad, get back to being aggressive. There's no harm in putting your foot in. There's no harm in leaning on people. There's no harm in winning your battles. And that was all over the pitch. Andy Robertson was unreal again. Everyone was on the front foot. Everyone was up for a scrap. And that's what you'd expect from Liverpool. And I say to my lad playing footy now, he's learning how to do it. And I say to him and to his team, you need to be aggressive like Liverpool. Liverpool, the most aggressive team in the league. But they don't kick anyone. It's not fouls. It's about going and get, that's our ball, gives it back. That's our ball, we want it. And against Villa, there was none of that. But they wanted it more. And yesterday, Liverpool were so good because it was every spare ball, that's ours, we're getting it, and then we're playing. And the passing, the short little one-twos and everything at the start of the game, you know, it's easy to say Liverpool were dominant, and Everton were crap, but Everton are dangerous. But not many teams in the world would have lived with Liverpool there when they were playing football like that. Liverpool were great, no two ways about it. It's a shame we didn't win, but the response from the 7-2 was exactly what you want.
It was total midfield dominance, Rob. The Liverpool three runs all over Everton's four. Rodriguez is more of a midfielder than a forward. It always gets written down the shape as though it's 4-3-3, but he's in there. He's in the midfield. Even Richarlison, at times, it's almost a bit more 4-5-1, if we're honest about it from an Everton point of view.
Yeah.
But it was absolute midfield dominance from those three of them all the way through the game. I think Fabinho is pretty solid throughout. I thought Henderson was the dominant force of the match in the first half, and Thiago was just exceptional second.
Yeah, our midfield threes do always look blended and hugely competent and world-class as units. But I thought that was a really special combination in particular yesterday. We have not obviously seen that combination literally that before because Thiago hasn't started, I suppose. I thought Fabinho was very, very good. Jordan Henderson, no rustiness whatsoever. And Thiago, it was a masterclass second half. Just to pick up on just some of the general point that Ben was making, I thought what was most impressive yesterday was I think everyone's really references was the mentality. It wasn't just to come back from the Villa debacle and start well. It was almost an exercise in, we're going to give you as many many quirks of fate going against you as we can, and let's see how you deal with these. Because the loss of momentum after the Van Dijk thing, It's for many reasons, really. One, it's the moment where we're about to score the second goal, really. They're under such intense pressure that Pickford's reduced to that utter recklessness. Could have had the penalty. So Everton at that stage would have felt themselves a team who were about to be battered 5-0 on their own pitch. That's what that game looked like it was about to become. They'd got out of jail after the Van Dijk incident, and they'd also, I suppose, they got out, also they were given hope by the fact that Liverpool had lost their defence in the figure of Virgil van Dijk. That has got to encourage any team in the world against Liverpool to go, he's not there. It's like someone's removed a big part of the wall. You know, I can see some light through there. And that did lift them. But so everything was there actually to sort of counter stem Liverpool's early momentum. What was impressive is that Liverpool managed to find it back again and time again throughout the game, even into bloody injury time and win the game in inverted commas. What was the question? Midfield. Yeah, they were ace.
I think when we're talking about the ability to respond to setbacks, we spoke in general about the Villa game and coming to that, but like Rob mentions, in the derby itself, and by the way, we have to put it into context, so you get absolutely annihilated at Villa, worst defeat in 57 years, and your next game is against an Everton team that have looked the best of any Everton team, I think, of the last decade, on the anniversary of their last derby win. So there was a lot of things building into this game that sort of suited Everton, that Liverpool could have been psychologically damaged, that Everton were the top scoring team in Europe's top five leagues, had the highest score in Europe's top five leagues. Rodriguez has just been in inspirational form for them. Their midfield has looked so good. So Dominic Calvert-Lewin actually said he went into the game believing it was the day for Everton. Like, he was convinced it was the day Everton would win a derby because of all the factors leading into it. So to lose Virgil van Dijk so early, to see him leave the pitch, to then have to rearrange, to also know that you don't have the world's best goalkeeper there as well. So you've lost your two transformers effectively. And for Liverpool to still be able to, I think there was a period in the second half where Everton definitely shaded proceedings, as you'd expect them to on their own pitch, as good as they've been at the start of the season. But Liverpool still, again, endure and get through that. And the midfield performance was excellent. It is very hard to dominate a Carlo Ancelotti midfield, especially when he plays against Liverpool, as we've seen with Napoli previously. But that balance was just sensational. And it was all, I think Henderson just set the tone. He was impeccable, immense, but he's also so core to that reaction we talk about, because he doesn't let anyone dwell on the fact that Van Dijk's just gone off. It's okay, come on, bang on, bang on, bang on. And I think that for me as well was one of the key takeaways, that so much went against them, even in the context of the game, and yet they were still able to be Liverpool.
Just Mel, what one of the things I think is really interesting that they do is they target Alan in a way that, you know, they targeted Jorginho in the past. This is, and again, this is something which this side's so good at psychologically, is it actually goes at your, who's your, what do you think is your strong link? We're going to go and take your strong link out of the game and watch it all fall around. And we've seen this team do this over and over again. I think it's a really interesting thing that Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool will do. They will at times decide this is who they think is their most reliable footballer. So let's just introduce so much doubt into his reliability. And I think they did it brilliantly with Alan. Fabinho coming and pressing him repeatedly. Henderson right on top of him. It was a clear plan, wasn't it?
It was, absolutely. And that's, Liverpool will always look at, as people will look at Liverpool and think, what's core to their system? Okay, Roberto Firmino, we're going to try and reduce his influence as much as possible. And Liverpool do the exact same. Who is fundamental to the opposition system? Now, Alan's been one of Everton's, you know, core figures to their start of the season. You used a good word there, reliable. He's been dishing out like 8 out of 10 performances and stuff. So it's, how can you stop him from doing that? I think also Liverpool looked at the midfield and the selection of Thiago for this game in particular, first start, Merseyside derby, which, you know, at Goodison as well, which is always such a tense, horrible game you endure, not enjoy. So the thinking very much was, we're going to impede their midfield and make sure ours has all the tools to then be the dominant force. And I think what we saw was like that positional intelligence, diligence, and Fabinho's just appetite to win back the ball, to not be beaten in his zone. Henderson just being all things to everyone, just the complete midfielder. And then Thiago's ability to just pause the game and do what he wants, just control it in the most graceful manner possible. The midfield was definitely a pick.
I thought he was taking his time Thiago, it took him a while, I thought, in the first half to entirely come to grips. He was never behind the pace, but I thought he was playing on the stretch a lot more first half, just about getting getting his foot through the ball and getting the nicks away. But it was by half time, I fully understand this now. It was like he just got his heart rate up to the correct level he intended beforehand, and then he just expressed himself. It was a masterclass second half. We were just chatting beforehand. I've watched every YouTube going at Thiago. I like to see, I've seen bits of him down the years. I know his reputation. You don't ever see it till you see it. That you suddenly went, I mean, Henderson was sensational. He's a fantastic footballer, footballer of the year. Fabinho's awesome. Gini Ronaldo, all these guys are good. Thiago's better than them. He's really, really good. And he will make us better if we can keep other people fit.
Yeah, I thought the midfield was brilliant, and I think the plan. I think you mentioned the plan, Neil. I thought it was executed to perfection, and it was to give Alan 3 or 4 jobs, because Everton midfield's quite sort of that midfield that they've got, a 4 or 5, whatever it is, but it's quite what's the right word? Is it lateral? It's almost like a 2 and a 2. You know what I mean? When Liverpool were like, oh, that's smashing. God, watch this. You know, they sort of press him 1s and 2s, Evan, and the Ancelotti style. And I think it can work if you're not really brave and you're not really on it. But Liverpool just kept popping. Salah one side of Alan behind one of the midfielders. And then Mane come inside of the other. Robertson was just offered so much thrust down that side. And we just made the pitch massive. And they had just too much to do. And there's nothing more dispiriting when you're playing centre mid than looking, thinking, oh my God, I should be over there. I'm thinking, oh, well, who's doing him? Because I'm trying to block this. And Liverpool just, you know, it was excellent. And, we deserve more. I agree with Rob. And you just hope he hasn't got an injury that's going to keep him out for any length of time. More so for any other reason, Thiago, than I've never seen him play, really. I've never really watched him. I don't really watch footy, apart from Liverpool. And I just enjoy watching him. I'd watch him all day. He's got everything. And me, we were talking before it started, Rob said he's like Mascherano plus without the ball. But then you give him the ball and he's better than Alonso. The stuff that surprised me, all the easy stuff, he sort of that little shape where you think he's going to lose the ball and then he's passed someone. You think, bloody hell, how's he done that? That's something of nothing. The reverse pass, you think, that's unbelievable how he's seen that and the little things he does. That's unbelievable in itself. The stuff that surprised me was the stuff going the other way. I wasn't sure he could turn very much, based on absolutely nothing but a sense of a player from having seen bits and pieces of him over the years. But his ability, you think he's beaten his ability to just win the ball, block a pass. Someone's passed him, he still comes out with the ball. I just didn't know he had that in his locker, and I just hope for my own mental health that he's...
No, I'm with you on the, John, the extent to which, like, I watched it and I was thinking about it last night after I'd had a few drinks, and all I was thinking was, I want to watch Thiago and Henderson on the same pitch in a ground pretty soon. I want to see because I think Henderson's worked out how good he is before everybody else. And I think there's a real thing there where between the two of them, they're so capable of basically changing the way a game's going in an instant, in completely different ways, but they've both got that ability to say, the football match happens 30 yards up that way now because we've just decided. And they've both got it in, as I say, did completely different ways of doing it in a sense. But I was just watching, when I was watching it and seeing highlights and watching it back and thinking about the game, I was thinking, I just want to sit in a ground soon and watch these two both play at the same time. Nothing to make me happier.
I know. I mean, the idea of sitting in the ground is a luxury. I just want to watch him on the telly for now. I'll take that. The ground, we can talk about that later. I'll take watching him in the flesh. And I also think, why it's been so tough, the way the game pans out, I think if you look at any other player in that team who you wouldn't want to be injured if Van Dijk was injured, and I think it's, for me, I think based on the performances yesterday, for a number of reasons, it's Thiago. Because number one, it means Fabinho can play in there. Well, yep. He's all right and Virgil's out for a while. It means he's freed up to go in there. Number two, I actually think we might have to just, depending on when Ali's back, we might have to go back to just being a bit mad and scoring more goals than everyone else and just accepting that, because we're not going to keep it tight as much as we would have done if Van Dijk was playing, and we're not going to keep it tight if Alisson's not in goal and we've got a scarecrow. So let's start trying to score loads of goals again. And the one way of doing that, if Thiago plays 30 games this season, Mo Salah and Sadio Mane are probably going to score more than 30 goals each, because he's that good. He's that good at beating that sort of low block. He's that good at opening space. He's that good at finding the pass that no one else sees. I'm almost convincing myself that I'd rather Virgil was out longer than him. And I know that's just ridiculous, but I've been awake all night.
I have as well, I've been absolutely not slept. I've not slept. I'm really tired. And Virgil, it's going to be both of them. I think we're going through this phase. I'm very fatalistic about football, and it's been too nice for too long now, these two and a half years. When it gets horrible, it's going to get horrible in a big way. Do you know what? Okay, can I be pessimistic for a minute? Half a minute.
Cut loose.
I just remember this phase. People talk about the Sooners, when Sooners takes over and how Liverpool ends. Whatever Sooners did wrong there, injuries are a fucking killer in football. They just are. I mean, people forget now. It did for Jurgen Klopp in his last season at Dortmund. They just had so many injuries, and then they're just shit. And we're like bottom half of the table for two-thirds of the season, despite having the wonderful... we know how good Jurgen Klopp is. He couldn't stop that team. And people go, we've been there a long time, blah, 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 listening to his voice, blah, blah. No, half the team was out. Half the team was out, and it made them shit. If Alisson's injury, if Alisson's shoulder proves a problem, Thiago's not exactly not made of glass, by the way. Can I just point this out before this may be our last great sort of eulogy about how fantastic he is. But
hang on, what? You can't, Rob, you can't write his career off. I mean, I'm happy to see him again.
I'm just really, really worried that he's going. That this is going to be a very bad injury for him. It's just knee injuries. Henderson's recent knee injury was the first knee injury I can recall us having where it just says, it's just a few weeks. You know what I mean? The one he got at the tail end of last season. Actually, wasn't just a few weeks. It was sort of, and the whole preseason, wasn't it? But that was a minor one. Knee injuries are so rarely minor. That's my worry about it. And he's got some form. Anyway, I'll finish that. I can get positive again, but I just need some good news now. I do need some good news.
Rob, you need some sleep as well, I think.
I know. I'm losing it, man.
Because of what we do so well in midfield, Mel, it leaves Everton with basically one option. Well, two options. One is to just hope Liverpool's intensity dips a little bit, which I think does happen just after, from about 50 to about 60, as you mentioned before in the game. I think Liverpool aren't quite able to keep that going, and then they can find ways to play in moments, Everton. But the other thing it leaves them with is consistently looking to go pretty long from either centre-half or the goalkeeper to Calvert-Lewin. And I think that, you know, and trust me, we'll get stuck right into the Blues in a minute or two. I'm really looking to be that magnanimous to opponents and under normal circumstances on the Anfield Wrap. But we may, as Liverpool supporters, have to acknowledge that Dominic Calvert-Lewin could be the absolute real deal. I thought he was excellent throughout. I think he pins Liverpool really well. He's obviously tremendous in the air, but he's also got genuine pace. He reads the game well. And I thought he was actually a really effective outball for an Everton side that was second best.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we speak about that period that Everton grew into the game. Like I said earlier, I thought Shea did it, controlled that period better. And you can say that Liverpool lost intensity or such, but also Everton are actually a very good team and have been a very good team this season and will, as you'd expect on their own patch, have those kind of moments. And he was crucial to that because you have to find a way to get the better of that Liverpool team, and going long was definitely it, especially with him as the outball. And I actually remember Jürgen Klopp spoke about Dominic Calvert-Lewin in the build-up to this game, but he'd spoken about him actually I think last season, and he said he had all the tools to be a really good forward because he's got the pace, he's got the aerial ability, he's got strength in how he uses his body. And all he needed was a consistent supply and just a consistent run in the team to sort of feel himself in and to learn what kind of player he is. And I think he's got all that now. When the ball is in the air and you know he's going to attack it, in the ground yesterday, you knew once he left, even just as the ball was coming in and he was going for it, you knew it was going to be a goal because that's such a strength of his. And I think sometimes with players, I think maybe Danny Ings is going through it now and Jamie Vardy's been through it before. You look at their run of form and you think, is this just a golden patch, or when is this going to run out? And I don't think that's the case with him. I think I really like watching him play. I think he's really good.
He is really good. He gets the run on Robertson. There's no Van Dijk, obviously, at this point in the game, Ben. He gets the run on Robertson there, and he's towering above him. All the way through the match, you felt as though something was going to go for him at some stage. He had that real sort of number nine feel, to be quite honest with you, again, that you feel as though it's gonna be there for him. It's interesting to me, you know, he's become this player before our very eyes, really, across the last few weeks. It is an excellent finish for the goal. That said, I think that Mane and Salah's finishes are absolutely tremendous as well. It just shows the power of having an attacker, and especially one through the middle of the pitch, who you do feel as though is just able to offer a constant threat with almost anything that comes in from wide. It doesn't even have to be that good a ball.
No, and sometimes you can't. Sometimes a goal gets scored and there's not a great deal you can do about it. And I think his goals, as Mel's right, as soon as that ball's in the air, you think, fucking hell. But the issue is, don't let the ball go in the air.
Yeah.
Do you know, and we've done that brilliantly. And in fairness, Matip and Gomez played really well.
Yeah.
They marked him really well. He's a good player. There's no two ways about it. He's a cracking player. And Liverpool marked him really well. He had the opportunity where he didn't sort of connect with it. And then he scores the goal. Liverpool will be disappointed with Albie gets on that line. It's just Trent just does not. It's just too easy. He just stands there. He doesn't go. His man peels off him. He sees him going. He stands still. I just don't know what. I don't know what he's meant to be doing. I don't know what he thinks he's doing. But it wasn't any good. I don't know. It's easy, isn't it, when your keeper's not in, when your proper keeper's not in, you've got a fella who's not the greatest. I'm having it. If Alisson plays, they don't score. Because I think he just comes out and catches that.
He comes for that, do you?
Yeah, because it's in the air for ages.
Do you think if Alisson's playing, Alisson's almost feels like we've seen in the past Alisson do some mad stuff whilst he's playing. But I don't think that's a ball that most goalkeepers come for, to be honest with you. But I know exactly what you mean about Alisson. That Alisson would be what I think Alisson would either anticipate the direction of the header and be one more stride if he doesn't come over to getting a hand to it, or that Alisson would just have come and claimed it because he'd have spent the entire match. Watch the tapes of Calvert-Lewin, talk to his coaching staff, and would have said, I'm just going to come for everything that's 12 yards out. If it's 12 yards or closer, I'm coming, and I'm going to get a hand to it and just divert it away. I do think that's a fair comment, is my point. But the reason why is because Alisson Becker is the best in the world at what he does.
Yeah, exactly. It's not so much a critique of, you know, it's easy to stand in and say, Adrian's shite. I'll do that all day long. But there's an argument to say neither of them goals can really be saved. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
But in the same breath, it's easy to, there's an argument to be made where you can say, if Alisson's in goal, they don't score either of them goals, because the first one just sticks because he doesn't fall backwards, he stands up and it sticks. And the second one, he as you say, he either comes and gets it because he thinks, well, there's no Virgil. Robertson's never, ever in a million years competing with him because he can jump higher than anyone I've ever seen. Ridiculous, by the way.
He can jump higher than Steve Smith.
He can jump over your house. I think the point is Alisson's that good that he's a game changer, isn't he? He can make a difference.
Alisson comes for the cross. Adrian allows himself to be blocked off on that the first goal, I think. I think Alisson's much more assertive and doesn't even allow the header. I mean, the thing to remember, I suppose, is that Alisson, if a keeper's front-footed and forward-thinking the way Alisson is, he is as good as a 6'10" centre-half because he's got his hands, you know. And I do agree with you, Ben. My first instinct was that ball's in the air too long, you've got to come. Then you watch the replay, and I agree with you, Neil. I agree 99 out of 100 keepers, not 99 out of 100, 9 out of 10 keepers do not come for that. But I think when you don't have Virgil van Dijk, the keeper's got to play differently. And Adrian doesn't quite have the confidence to do that. Fair play to him. I don't think many would. I think Alisson could have done. The first goal, though, for me is the bigger problem goal. I think, is the second goal to do with James Rodriguez cross? Or does he... My impression of Everton's good spell is we gave him far too much space. He seemed to find a pocket, even though we praised the midfield to the skies, he finds a pocket where the fullbacks aren't picking him up and the midfield aren't picking him up.
In Evan's good spell, what I think Hammers does is he sticks to the right a lot less and he goes wandering a little bit.
Yeah.
So Liverpool have got quite a structured approach for dealing with it and ensuring he can't get the ball. He comes off his flank a bit more, but then that going the other way means Robertson's got even more time and space. Yeah. So I think Evan take a little bit of a gamble between 50 and 60. They do it for a period of time, but then we just push them back again. But I think James, when he absolutely went pure wandering, yes, he got on the ball a little bit more, but it exposed Everton even more. And that's why, for me, Rob, if there's a bit of a criticism of Liverpool, I don't think they're quite ruthless enough around when they get time and space around the penalty area in all phases of the game. And also, I don't think they're quite as good as I'd like them to be at 2-1. I felt Mo Salah had scored the winner. Because I just thought Liverpool will just go into a little compact box and just say to Everton, you're not getting this back. The ball's at Thiago's feet or it's in the stand. And I'm a little, you know, if I am criticising Liverpool over the course of it, what is a pretty excellent 90 minutes under the circumstances, it's for those two things, not having created enough clear-cut opportunities when you've had the opportunity to do so. And I think that's a bit of a problem for this team at the minute. And the other thing is, I think they should shut it down better at 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, we're very unlucky with the Matip header. It's a fantastic save by Jordan Pickford, and we should have had a penalty because Fabinho's being held at the same time, but they don't want to talk about the odd penalty, but that's another conversation. But yeah, I don't think we should have been better at 2-1. I actually think Mo Salah's... He had a very strange game, you know. He's always getting into the right positions. His one-touch play is really good, but in the first half and into the second half, there's a lot of things where it's him standing his man up, and you go, come on, Mo, go past him, do your thing, or get your shot away. And he doesn't really. He gets away a couple of very tame efforts or blocked efforts in the first half. I was actually beginning to go, I'm not sure this is Mo's day today. I think I'd like Jota as the first change for Mo, or second change, because Van Dijk had gone off. And I knew I was goading Mo in saying that. I knew somewhere he was hearing me within a few minutes of it. And I looked at Steve Graves, who was getting increasingly angry with me for across the table, I stress. We weren't at the same place. He was looking angrily at me for slagging off Mo Salah, but I knew what I was doing, and that goal was superb. But he did have a strange game.
And you are claiming an assist for it, which is excellent. Fair play to you.
Yeah, I did it for Trent last season. I slagged him off, and he banged one in the top corner from a free kick against Palace.
The decisions, Mel, and I think the decisions, let's gird our loins and get into them. The first one, the Pickford one, is, firstly, it's an argument about the rule. It's also just, frankly, a dreadful thing for a professional footballer to be doing. And I've seen Pickford do similar. I think there's a game against Tottenham, the 6-2, where he's very, very, very late on Dele Alli just before half-time. And I think Harry Kane ends up getting involved because they know each other from England duty. And I think Kane actually just tells him he's out of order. But for me, it's a massive question about the rule, really. Yes, he's offside. When does serious foul play become violent conduct? What's the line there? Because for me, I think that the referee would have been well within his rights, whether instructed to by VAR or not, to have issued a red card.
Yeah, the rule is not the issue in this case, because he could have been punished even though it wasn't an offside decision. I think there was some misinformation being spread yesterday. He could still have been punished for that serious foul play, despite it being offside. But Michael Oliver, in the first instance, has a view of it and doesn't do anything. And then VAR is only concerned as to whether Virgil van Dijk is offside or not. And that's the only thing they review. So there is no review of the foul itself and whether it's a red card. That did not take place. Now, as we know, Liverpool have asked the FA for a review of the application of VAR in the game. And naturally, that will be slaughtered as sour grapes and stuff. But I think it's really important. And I want to note that a lot of clubs did the same last season. I think Everton were one of them, actually, that wrote to ask for an explanation of decisions. And it's important we get this transparency, because we need to understand what is happening. With that decision, the review, the idea not to review whether it was a red card offense, that is what lots of broadcasters were told. That was confirmed to them. And yet we had contradictory reports where information was given to The Athletic that actually they did review whether it was a red card offense and felt that it wasn't. So this is why getting official explanations from them is important, because if we are to have faith in the system, or if we are to understand it, or if we are to get on board with it, we need to know its failings, but also if we're misunderstanding it. There is no way, I don't think there's anybody working in the professional game, whether it's footballers, match officials, former ones, that have said that that wasn't a sending off offense. It was incredibly reckless. Let's take away the fact that Virgil van Dijk had to go off injured and is probably facing a very serious injury. So take that out of the equation. The act itself of going in with both your legs, this is a tackle, basically wrapping them around a standing leg, is hugely, hugely, hugely dangerous. It was very unnecessary off a tackle as well. And it was aggressive. So for it to be not punished at all in any way is mind-boggling. It's absolutely staggering, just ridiculous. And the fact that there was no VAR look at that incident, there was no scrutiny of it, is shambolic, because you can think, okay, the referee's missed it, or he's probably maybe not seen enough of it, or maybe when we look at the pictures, it looks like he's got a clear view, but maybe it was impaired some way. That is exactly what you have the technology there for, to then have a second look.
I think Melma, the key point is we need to have faith. We need to be given reasons to have faith in VAR, that it is doing the job we expect it to do. We are having to pay a price as supporters of having this delayed gratification thing, and we all suffered with it yesterday, and we suffered with it before. You'll put up with that if you think justice is being served. Now, I for me, I was annoyed. I mean, obviously, the red card and the injury to Van Dijk and the recklessness of Pickford is the main takeaway from that particular incident. But not talked about enough for my money is the was Van Dijk actually offside or not bit. That seemed to get glossed over far too quickly to me. And the lines that got drawn seemed to be getting drawn ever more arbitrarily. And the body part that was offside again looked his elbow, not the armpit. And this is the problem on the second one, the winning goal. Well, the theoretical winning goal. Again, so there's no attempt to clarify this for us. Maybe in the heat of battle, within the context of broadcast, in the context of even being in a stadium, it's really, really hard to 100% communicate why a decision has gone and been made the way it has been made. But there's not enough, as you say, Mel, an accountability that puts this right. Because look, I'm thinking, are we waiting for Monday Night Football to understand it? They've got to do a lot better there, because those two decisions, I felt the injustice on the offside, because I think that I think that Van Dijk thinks a penalty. I think he's onside. There's no part of his body that could have played the ball that was offside, and so was the last one. It just feels like major injustice, and you shouldn't feel that way about a technology-based decision.
Ben, it's a deeply reckless challenge. And I think that that's one of the things here about the first one, is that it is a deeply reckless challenge and that there should be consequence for that. I actually think you can make a pretty solid argument that if Pickford is retrospectively banned for 3 matches, it's actually in Everton's interests.
You should have to play him for the next 3 matches.
Yeah, there should be...
They'll extend the ban to 6.
There should be something where I just think that having watched, and again, without it sort of being sour grapes, it is an utterly ridiculous thing to do from a footballer who's repeatedly shown a spectacular lack of maturity in a lot of what he does, to be honest with you. He's a danger full stop. He's a danger to Everton Football Club. He's a danger to himself, and he's a danger to opponents. And if he doesn't get punished, then there is the idea that, well, he'll continue to be a danger.
He's crap. And that yesterday was an act of a crap keeper. He doesn't know where the ball is. He hasn't got a clue where the ball is, so he panics and throws himself. It was mad. It was a moment of madness. He's fucking mad. I think the issue with VAR, right, and the issue with the likes of that, you look at that and you think, well, that issue in its entirety, as Rob says, just smacks of unfairness. That's one of them. You have to suck it up. Players got injured. Should it have been a goal? You know, it's a massive defining moment in the game. Do you know what I mean? If it's a penalty, he gets sent off, it's 2-0, Liverpool won the game, probably win 4-5-0. No bother, because we were brilliant. We were flying. We never got it. It's hard lines. It's one of them. You've got to suck it up. The thing that fucks you off is ultimately, Rob was mentioned, sort of referring, and Mel was referring to it earlier, VAR, and asking for an explanation. The problem with it is, nothing wrong with the technology. Problem is, it's the fucking divvies who are running it. And whilst there's divvies in charge of the system, you're still going to have these issues. And I don't know, everyone plays amateur footy, and being refereed by absolute gobshites. And in the main, they tend to be gobshites, these people. Tend to be people who've never played and who are gobshites by the very nature. They like telling people what to do. And these ones are the very best gobshites. They've worked their way right up through the system from being a gobshite, and it just turns out that they're the best that they've got, but they're still gobshites. And it's like getting pulled by it's like speeding, right? You're speeding in a car, you get pulled by a busy, fair dues, you've got me. You start acting a bit cocky with the busy, and you say, what was it doing? And he says, oh, look at that. You start finding something else. Your tyres aren't pumped up properly, or this, is that, the other. You ask them for an explanation, they close ranks, as Mel said. We did review it. How can we fucking prove that they never? They're not going to show us a replay of the whole time he was in that cabin. You know what I mean? It's a closed thing. You can't argue with them. You can't argue with these people. So, yeah, VAR is shit. The reason it's shit is because the people who are running it are not open. They're not transparent. They won't stand there and explain the decision. they just say, yeah, we did with you. We fucking did. You never. You fucking never. We did, yeah, lads, yeah, we did. We made a mistake, so what? You'd prefer it if they come out and said, yeah, we caught up. We made a mistake. He should have been sent off, one of them, innit?
But they're
never going to do that.
There's something in it, Rob, where I'm on the what should be the winner. There's a massive issue, because one of the issues is when you have the technology conversation, one of the issues is we are at least told we are theoretically seeing the same images that they are.
Mm.
So this is one of the... So if it was genuinely not transparent, i.e. we don't get to see what they see, then I'd almost find it a little bit easier. I keep wanting to see an angle that shows Sadio Mane's offside. Like, I'd love to see one genuinely edge and make me go, oh, all right, then, yeah, he was. And there's no, you know, and it's in part, a lot of this is about perspective, and a lot of this is about, I mean, perspective in a number of different ways, but especially perspective of a camera. Like, one of the issues is you are left going, I disagree with the way you're drawing those lines there. And that's mad. You know, it really yes. is mad. And I'm looking at it going, and this is where, for me, the Mane one's absolutely, I would love to genuinely think he's offside. I think he's slow coming back. I think he's borderline. Obviously, he's borderline. But I've yet to see it in any way that makes me go, well, he's offside. And I think that that's something which is really, really difficult, because I'm getting to see it. So I just end up in a situation going, I just think he's a wrong, to be honest. And that's the thing that I shouldn't be able to think once we've gone through this process.
What's occurring to me is they're sort of simulating precision technology-based decision-making. So like a Hawkeye thing in tennis, or like a goal line technology thing, it's absolute, because the computer's drawn the line, that the actual physical things are. But this is not precision based. They've got a tool and they're fucking around with it, because they're having their hands on steady. The first minute it goes to go, we're all everyone's sitting there watching on telly going, is this going to be offside or not? Okay, it's definitely onside. The first thing they lay the line down, oh, look, he's showing it's onside. Then his line starts wobbling, or it's wobbling. What's going on? The computer's not reanalyzing. There's no new calcs going on. A fella's going, should we nudge it over a little bit? Oh, look, if we nudge it over a little bit, he now looks offside. And then let's draw the line upwards. Oh, it's on his elbow. Yeah, what the fuck? I mean, there's so much what the fuck. First is there's the semi-arb. When it's such fine margins, they could have put that fucking line wherever they want. Even forget this one. Even the armpit ones. They've got a choice as to where they want to put that line. They've got a choice. It's not precision. They are not going to micro technology into the hair on the armpit. They're just going, that's there or thereabouts. It's almost like it's a subject. It's what I'm saying is, when it's borderline, they're still making subjective calls, and it's a bit
when VAR was spoken about and stuff initially when it was introduced. We actually did a whole induction at Stockley Park. So we sat in the booth, they went through the whole process with us and explained, you know, decision making and stuff. And it was, you're either offside or you're not offside. So this is not, it's not about clear and obvious errors and stuff. Yep. You're either off or you're not. But the truth of that is they also said they do not have the technology to be 100% accurate. They don't have, you know, the frames per second. So when you're stuck, it's dependent on when you're stopping the frame to do the lines and the
ball leaves the foot.
Yeah. The technology is not as advanced to give you the exact moment. They admitted that. So it's actually when it's so close, that's where we have the issues, because, well, which frame did you choose to stop it at? What moment did you choose? And therein lies the issue. That's one of the things Liverpool have also asked for clarity on, because that's been looked at loads of times by different broadcasters. So I've seen it on Match of the Day, obviously Sky itself, I've seen clips of international, it being discussed on international broadcasts. And even with the explanations of, you know, where the line was drawn and what angle was used and the fact that it looks different on TV because of the camera angles and whatever. There is so much unclear about it. And there, you look at it and like Neil was saying, you're waiting. Like Neil, I want to be certain that it's offside, because then that reduces the feel that, you know, Liverpool have been undone or have been unfairly done there. And I can't find it. And even listening to Alan Shearer and Ian Wright on Match of the Day yesterday, where they were looking at it, and Gary Lineker as well, all completely baffled by it because there's no way to see concretely that it is offside. And one of Liverpool's issues were their performance analysts who have the technology and stuff and mirrored it can't see where it's offside either.
Yep.
That's the issue, isn't it?
Ben, we used to the spirit of the law of offside was it changed, I don't know, what was it, 20 years ago, about if you're level, you're onside. So the thing was, where doubt exists, and this is with the naked eye, advantage with the attacker. It seems to me that some of these decisions, considering they can't be precise, they're making precise calls. There'll always be a line of contention. Just like, theoretically, if you made those thin wobbly lines they put on five times as thick, so they were like a big magic marker thickness, each one. And you said, if there's any overlap, he's onside. Do you know what I mean? Okay, at some point, there won't be an overlap by millimetres. But then you go, well, at that stage, I can see frigging daylight between the attacker and what have you. But every marginal decision should just be, it's very easy to wipe out the marginals and go, they just favour the attacker. Let the defenders take that into account and know that if they're getting them offside, they've got to get them offside clearly. You can still be technologically, well, based about it. You can still use VAR, but you can't say VAR is making precision calls when it doesn't have the precision capability.
The issue is, you touched on it. They're trying to tell you something that your eye doesn't agree with and it doesn't fucking stack up. It's never going to stack up. You can never square it in your own head because you're looking at it thinking, well, that's onside. And then they're saying it's not. And the lines that they draw to justify it, you're like, well, I don't understand them lines.
Post-match, BBC, BT kept saying, and I understand why they were saying, obviously, the goal was offside. And I was like ranting and raving in my head, going, it's not obvious. It's not obvious. I'd love it to be obvious. It's not obvious. Now, I'll do all the other bits with you now and I'll go through. But as you say, it was like your brain cognitively is going, that's not obvious.
And I think, look, if you're going to get issues like this, you're going to get moments in matches that are ruined. And Liverpool may, you know, later on in the season, we might go to Man City and get one of these in our favour and it'll still be shit. Because ultimately, and you'll benefit from it one day, and you'll lose the benefit from it another day. But ultimately, it just doesn't feel right. You feel cheated watching it because you're looking at it that he's in a line. And I think it's illogical to try and approach this whole process of offside by whether it's like lines on a graph, because I always remember the Aguero one against Tottenham in the Champions League, where they score in the last minute, they go, you know, to go through.
He's come Sterling, wasn't it?
Whoever was offside is running backwards to get onside. He's coming from an offside position to come back, similar to Mane yesterday. He's offside and he's coming back to then go the other way. Now, as a defender, I'm watching him offside, right? He's there. He's not gaining an advantage by this fucking, let's assume that the right, okay, let's assume that the bottom of his top, which is the change in the rule, the bottom of his sleeve doesn't say how long your sleeve is. You might have, what Liverpool should probably do is get fucking shorter sleeves for the forwards.
Get more wearing vests.
Longer sleeves for the fucking defenders.
Aussie rules.
Or whichever way round it goes, shorter sleeves for the defenders, longer sleeves for the forwards, whatever. Or, because that's in an offside position, they've given. Well, there's no moral advantage. Offside for me is very much a moral question. Has he gained an advantage by being ahead of the forward? No, he hasn't. Right, it's not fucking offside then. And that is all. I think that's always the way it's being reffed. Do you know what I mean? Because that's the easy thing for your eye to decide. Is he gaining an advantage? Yes, he is. He's offside. Is he coming back the other way? He's crossed over. Well, he's going that way, so it doesn't really fucking matter. Right, he's not offside. And that's easy when you're a liner to put your flag up and keep it down. You might get it wrong, so fucking what? You got one wrong. You can't tell me that this system better than that, because I'm looking at what you'd ask 1,000 linesmen and all fucking 999 of them would say, yeah, he's onside there.
I love the idea that offside. Mel, offside is a moral question. Offside is a moral question.
I don't know if we've straddled over to, what is it, agony hour there, but it sounds a bit off Ben in agony. But I've been pretty consistent with this because I've covered a lot of games not involving Liverpool, where the call has been so marginal and I just cannot get with it being given offside when the technology is not able to be as precise as the decision deserves. So it's not then based on fact. It's not you're either on or you're off. It's still being subjective if the technology cannot decide to that second that it is. And for those calls where you're looking at it and you're thinking, and I've seen a lot for a lot of teams, where you're looking at it and you're thinking, no, hang on.
Why couldn't they use, you know, this clear and obvious phrase they're using around things like penalties? If you applied that sounds really woolly and subjective, and I rant against that a lot of times. If you said in any given tight offside that VAR is asked to intervene, is your criteria is the offside itself has to be clear and obvious that it was offside in the advanced favour of the forward. Things like if you use just that phrase, none of the ones we're arguing about would have been given offside. Any of the armpits, just call it clear and obvious.
But what they are prepared to say, though, is they feel as though offside is absolutely objective, and it can be objective. But then you end up in a situation like this one. Okay, yeah. This is why I did this last, because we could be here all day.
Yeah, I'm ready.
I'm ready if you are. I'll put the kettle on. Let's go another hour.
I think Alan Shearer summed it up pretty well, where he said, they could not see Jordan Pickford's recklessness was a red card challenge, but they could see that was offside. This is why, you know, we spoke about having trust, having faith in the system. And I was pro it when it came out. I went to Stockley Park. I wanted to understand it. I wanted to learn. I wanted to give it an opportunity. But the issue with the technology is you're still having humans using it, and they are still prone to human error. Yeah. And I think we've seen yesterday. And the thing is, all humans make errors, and you have to own up to it. That's why we need the transparency. That's why we need, if they want us, all of us, all football fans, everybody that works in the industry and stuff, to get on board with it, we need greater clarity.
You've got in front of you there, Mel, your book. It is finished. When's it out? How many copies have you got there? Have you got all the copies?
No, I've just been given a few advanced copies. It's so weird. I can't believe I've done a book. But it's out on November 12th in stores. It's available to pre-order pretty much all over the world. It's such a taxing process, and lots of stress, sleepless nights, lots of second guessing.
How many pages, Mel?
Question.
looks a weighty tome.
You need to know how many pages.
I'm saying 350.
That looks long for a
244.
See, that's a serious book, that.
You know what? You know why I couldn't answer it? Because I haven't actually... it's not sunk in yet properly, and I haven't been emotionally ready, I think, to sit and page through it and spend time with it. It sounds like I'm talking about a baby, but this is my baby. It was very, very, it was very good to hold it in my hands because of all the effort that went into it. But I haven't spent time with it yet.
You're still making it sound like a baby.
It is my baby.
You'll get to go get it.
What are you going to call it?
Excellent.
It's got a name. Believe us.
There you go.
Can't wait to read it.
Do order it now. It will be the absolute business. And when I get my hands on one of those advanced copies, we will sit and talk to Mel about it 40 minutes or so, and that'll be fun. Well, for me, maybe not for Mel. She'll have to put up with it. My favourite bit of the process was when Mel messaged me having lost a chapter. That's my involvement in this, was trying to find a way for her to get a chapter back that she lost.
Even a chapter. It was the whole master copy, which had, I think at that point, nearly three chapters fully done, but with all the research, it was like 108 pages of research.
Yeah, Mel had a huge technological error, and she quite literally put a worse man on it.
I know it'll make this worse.
Yeah, yeah. I know who will not have the answer to this question at this time, but I'll ask him anyway. All right, let's look ahead to Ajax, Ben. I think it's important that he goes Matip and Gomez, I suspect, at centre-half. I think just to get them some time playing with one another. I think it's interesting if Gomez is going to play the left side of the two. I would go with that. And I think it actually throws open that question of where do you target Liverpool a little bit more in an interesting way, because you can't just say not the side with Virgil van Dijk on. So it's actually mildly interesting what sides do from a tactical point of view. I suspect we'll see Wijnaldum back. What else would you change, if anything?
I think he'll change a couple, just for freshness. I wouldn't be surprised if Jota plays. I wouldn't be surprised if some of the midfielders play. I'd absolutely give me house for Virgil to start and Thiago to get the winner.
Oh, fucking hell, yeah.
I know, it's just awful.
Ben needs some sleep as well.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I'll take a new 6-month lockdown in exchange for that. Fucking hell.
Yeah. I think the interesting point is I think Gomez actually being on the other side might do him a favour.
Yeah.
Because I think that right channel with Trent is the one that people target. And I think Matt have dealt with it yesterday.
Played well, didn't
better.
He?
Played really well. And he protected that area better than Gomez has in recent weeks. And I think it'll benefit Gomez a little bit. I thought the pair of them were great. And the injury's unlucky. The game yesterday was unlucky. But in football, you've got to suck it up and you've got to prove that it doesn't really matter. We'll carry on. And I think if Liverpool are able, just, you know, Virgil's injured for a long time and Liverpool are able to do something and win something this season, you know, if we win the league, then that is serious, serious response to any questions that anyone could ever have. And hopefully, you know, that's just Virgil, if he's out for a long time, come back and score the win in the European Cup final and then fucking strangle Pickford.
Marvellous. I mean, we went on a journey with you there, Benj. I'm not going to lie to you. Go on, Rob.
See it all before me. Can I just ask Mel a question here? Because he got glossed over a bit after the press conference on Friday. Naby Keita, he said he was out again. And he obviously, there was talks about him testing positive for COVID when he was away, and then he didn't test positive. And then Klopp said he wasn't ready for the weekend. Were we expecting him to be ready for this week? Can I ask you?
It's so difficult at the moment when players are unavailable, because the automatic thing that everybody will first say is that it's got to do with COVID. And unless there is official confirmation or statement or whatever from the club, we can never be sure. And because he was so evasive about what it could be that's keeping him out, it could be because Naby's had so many setbacks before that it's annoying to talk about him having another one. So you don't really quite know. And I am not the best person to speculate. I want accuracy. I want facts. So I can't give you an answer on that.
No, I'm just saying there wasn't, but he didn't offer any other information, did he? Other than he just said, Naby's not ready. And he just brushed it away. Well, okay, let's assume. So Wijnaldum is his only real changeable opportunity. Unless it's Wijnaldum and Jota really for Ajax.
Milner, Jones.
I don't think you take that chance for this game, really. You want to start. We have a habit of not starting the group well, don't we? And then putting ourselves under a bit of pressure later on. I mean, Ajax could, you know, no one's going to be shocked if they do a number on us, but they're also very beatable. And to get them one and then knowing we're playing the Minnows next week, Midgetland, we should, you know, that would be a very solid start to the group and put us in position to maybe get it boxed early for fucking once. So I think he's got to go strong against Ajax.
Mel, what do you think he's going to do?
I think he'll have to find the balance between, obviously, rhythm, but rotating fresh legs. I agree with everything Ben and Rob have said, in the essence that he will infuse fresh legs. Jota, Wijnaldum, I think Gomez and Matip will play because we now inherently need them to be comfortable playing with each other. And they did do very well. And so building that chemistry and that confidence will be important. Also, Ajax are a very good test of a defensive unit because of the way they play. So that will be good for Liverpool. It's, as we've already known, the most intense season we're going to have because of all the fixtures in such a short space or shorter space of time than ordinarily would be. And so the complication of trying to select, especially in this era of the coronavirus tests and all the positive results and other players testing positive and the international duty happening through all of this, by the way, is absolutely bananas. There should not be international football when it opens players up to such a risk, when they're having to leave the safety of their bubbles and go travel and be exposed to different things. And I do not envy any managers, especially the managers that have European commitments to deal with, because, man, this stuff is very, very, very difficult.
Indeed it is. We'll see how the rest will build up towards Ajax. Listen, we've got a thing at the minute on the website, support the team, support the city, with loads of causes, but also businesses you can support as Liverpool have gone into Tier 3. Do check that out on the Anfield Wrap. There's all sorts of stuff going on today on video, right the way around, post-match reaction to Everton, and there was the post-match show last night as well, and audio as well for you. We'll be doing Under the Lights, looking ahead to Ajax, all the Ajax build-up that you need, theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe. But I've had a lovely time on this Sunday morning, so thank you very much to Ben, to Rob, and to Mel. Let's hope that Rob and Ben manage to get their heads down at some point this afternoon. They deserve a good sleep. Do check out Mel's book as well. You can order it now from all the obvious places you get books from. We'll talk to her more about it. Liverpool went to Goodison Park. They played like champions. They deserved to get all 3 points, and Jordan Henderson deserved his moments. He didn't quite get it, but Jordan Henderson will be having more moments this season. See you later.
Sports Social Podcast Network.